Okay, if I could call the November 10th, 2011 appropriative pool meeting to order. We have before us the consent calendar items A and B. Does any of the pool members wish to pull any of these items?
Move to approve.
And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Moving on to business items, I would request that we table business items B, C, D, and E to the next meeting for further review and discussion.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that.
John, before we have a couple comments, what is the impact of moving item D down the month?
I don't think there's any impact. I think it's just a report to receive and file. It's something that the appropriative pool has been asking for, as you recall, for months to get a accurate accounting of reserves on hand at Watermaster. And given what's gone on in the last week or so, I think it'd be appropriate for us to maybe provide staff another opportunity to go back and take a look at this item and bring it forth.
Right. I understand on item B. My question was item D.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think there's a financial impact or a bill due that is in play.
Yeah, can I address that?
Sure.
You are correct. The payment, approximately $3.5 million, was due yesterday to IUA for the replenishment water. Watermaster did make a partial payment, approximately $1.5 million. As you all should be aware, there is a penalty, 2% penalty, and then plus 0.5% interest monthly for late payments on MWD pass-through invoices. Watermaster Dandy did send a letter yesterday with a request that IUA waive those penalties. And I have discussed this with several of the IUA board members, and they will fully consider that request, but not until a final resolution, you know, payment or storage agreements, whatever comes up, we have more of a certainty on what those will be. But the board is willing to fully consider that request on the penalties. The dates pass, so it is, you know, the penalties have been incurred, and the board would have to act to waive those penalties. From IUA standpoint, we certainly encourage the appropriate pool, Watermaster board, to move forward diligently on whatever agreements are going to be worked on. Because we think timing's of the essence. Having some conversations earlier this morning, it sounds like that process can occur fairly quickly. So once we know what the outcome appears to be and have more certainty on that, then we'll ask the IUA board to consider Watermaster's request on the penalties. The other thing, if I can, while I have the microphone real quick, on the Turner Basin improvements, if you drove up Archibald, you will see that there's some gravel mining or material processing. This is for the Ontario Grade Separation Project. We were able to work with the City of Ontario and the county to get another basin excavated at no cost. Also working, we do have a grant. I think it's about $157,000. I don't know if you know, Ryan, to do some work and improvements on the recharge facilities at the Turner Basin. We're working with Watermaster very closely in the County of San Bernardino we do have a work plan for improvements to the Turner Basin, both sides of Archibald Avenue, and we have opportunities to move forward with some improvements there. You don't need to deal with it today, but I did want to let you know that we're working very closely with Watermaster staff on developing those concepts and identifying some funding to make some additional recharge improvements at that location.
Thank you, Mr. Love. Did that answer your question?
Well, in light of that, we would be supportive of moving item B. I think I heard item C needs some decisions because of construction in progress, and D has a financial impact. So we wouldn't support deferring C and D discussion, at least.
Well, I think Mr. Love just indicated that there has been ongoing communication between IUA and the Watermaster Board. Requesting an extension, and I think we'll be talking about many of these items in closed session later on this morning. If you could provide me the luxury of trust, I think that after this morning's closed session, you'll probably better appreciate and understand the recommendation to move these items for further discussion for the next pool meeting. I do think that that things are in place to protect the pool and the water master from any negative or adverse things that may occur for pushing this off for another month.
Perhaps if we're going to discuss some of these subjects during a closed session, we ought to reorder the agenda, go into a closed session now, and then decide whether or not we're going to defer them for a month until after the closed session discussion.
Is John Schatz here yet?
John's not here yet.
We could certainly do that if that's the pool's pleasure. I think that I'm fairly well versed on what Mr. Schatz may be reporting, and if not, then we can go from there.
John, could I just suggest maybe then what we do is we skip to item 3 on the agenda, which is the reports and updates, and maybe have the Water Master staff go through that first, and then maybe that gives enough time for Mr. Schatz to get here. And then we could take Dave's suggestion and move the closed session.
Yeah, I think our engineer is also running a little late, as I've been told.
We could at least do legal counsel report, and then you're and I can talk for as long as you want me to. And then I think you're not skipping item A. Is that correct?
That's correct. So maybe
you could address that one too.
So if it's the pool's pleasure, we can go ahead and discuss item A in the business items, and then we'll find out who may be here after that, and we'll take it from there. And sound good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move to item A of the business items, the 8515 rule policy.
Okay. Good morning. So we've been discussing this issue for a couple of months now. The main issues with the 8515 policy as it stands now, there were some issues with the handling of water transfers and with preemptive storage. So we've been discussing it since September pool meetings, and then Watermaster held a workshop in September, and then we discussed it at the October pool meetings, and then just recently the appropriators held a special meeting for this issue. And it's my understanding that the recommendations that have come out of that special meeting were that, first of all, there wouldn't be any backwards corrections to any of the way that water transfers have been handled with regard to the 8515 rule. It's to be looking forward only. And there's a draft policy that's enclosed in the package that was provided to us out of that special meeting. So going forward, water transfers, the 8515 rule will only be applied to the exact portion of a water transfer that was used to offset that year's overproduction. So what we'd have to do is, in some cases, split a water transfer, treat it like two different water transfers, and we'd apply the rule to a portion of it, but not to the other portion. We'd apply it only to that part that offset overproduction. So it would look like two water transfers in our tables in the assessment package. And then also there was a condition in there that the policy will be revisited within 12 months as to how, well, I guess for any number of issues, but including how preemptive replenishment would apply, how the 8515 rule would apply to preemptive replenishment. And I know that one special request that came out of that meeting was that there be a table provided in the assessment package that shows which transactions had the 8515 rule applied to. And Sherry, if you could bring up that table. This one's always been in the assessment package, but I know there's been a lot of confusion regarding it. And so I had already, before I had this direction, I had already modified some of the headings on it a little bit to hopefully make it more clear. But there's already, she'll get up in a minute, but there's already a table there. It lists all of the water transfers for the year. And then there's a few columns off to the right. And it's those columns only are populated if the 8515 rule applies. So I just like clarification if this table is sufficient to meet your request or if I need to add in an additional table. It's just the assessment package is already so long as it is that if this one meets your needs or can be slightly modified to meet your needs, I'd sure love to do it that way. It's the one that says 7A through 7C. Okay, so as you can see, this is the draft for the new assessment package that's about to come out. So, you know, you haven't seen this yet. But these are all the water transfers, and this is actually a couple pages long. This is just the first page. These are all the water transfers that happened for the year. And you see off to the right those three columns. It says, if the 85-15 rule applies. So those columns are only populated if the 85-15 rule applies. If there's nothing in those columns, the 85-15 rule didn't apply. So to me, when I look at this, you can tell which ones it applied and which ones it didn't. But I don't know if this meets your needs, so I'd like some direction.
Mohammed? It doesn't really. This covers all the transactions. What we're looking for is just the 85-15 rule transactions separated, so totally the bottom. We know rather than having all the transactions one table. So it is a subset of this table, but my preference is to have a separate table just for the 85-15 rule.
And leave this one as it is?
You could leave it as needed, but what we're looking for is the 85-15 rule specifically. Only includes all the parties that they are subject to the 85-50 rule. So you have all their transactions and all their credits and obligation.
What if we split this table into two halves and all the ones that it didn't apply to were on the top half and all the ones it applied to were on the bottom half?
That would work.
Okay.
And it should show just the production that meets the criteria that's established as part of the new policy. Just for the production for the current, overproduction for the current year.
That should show the production, or you mean the transfer amount should be equal to that overproduction?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'd have to treat it as two transfers.
Right.
So if I split out the ones that it applied to and the ones that it didn't apply to, you know, you'd see one of those transfers or one part of it, you know, on top and one part of it on the bottom.
Yeah, what's missing really from this table is that for you to be able to follow the transaction, you have to look at all the other table, including the assessment dollars, the production numbers, the transfers. So you really have to try to pull numbers from different tables for you to be able to make sure that whether or not the rules being applied correctly or not. But if you have a separate table for that, and including the production, including the operating safe yield, including that transaction in total. You don't even have to have this specific transaction, whether it's applied to the 85-50 rule or not. That's really what we're looking for.
So you want the analysis of it, basically.
Correct.
So, Mohammed, wouldn't it just be the addition of two additional columns, the OSY and the production for the year?
Yes. The other comment I have, if I may, is that, as you mentioned, we're going to look at the 85-50 rule over the next 12 months. And the purpose here is that to preemptive replenishment, it's really included any other changes. So I would rather strike out the last three words from the purpose there and leave just to consider to review the application of the 85-50 rule in page 63.
You know, so I have a comment on this particular slide. When I look
just
at
strike out the last three words.
Was he finished?
Well, hang on. Did you get that, Danny?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For example, on the line Fontana Water and Monta Vista Water District, when I go to the right and I see the various columns, 85-15 applies. You have 85-15, and it looks like WM. I'm assuming that's Water Master Pays.
Right.
Now, as I understand the process, since this is going from Fontana to Monta Vista. Is it Monta Vista's paying the 85 or?
Monta Vista sold water to Fontana.
Okay, but under the column, you have Water Master Pays.
Okay, I can explain
it's
that.
It's a little confusing.
Because, I believe that the policy changes the past practice, but in the past, it's been allowed that the 15% can be applied to either the buyer or the seller, and that's been at the discretion of the buyer and seller to come to agreement on. We don't really care, or we haven't in the past, and the buyer and seller, as part of the transaction process, there's a checkbox on there. Through the assessment package process, does Water Master pay that 15% back to the buyer or the seller? That's something that was negotiated through the transfer. And so that's what you're seeing right there. Water Master pays the 15%.
To Monta Vista.
To either the buyer or the seller. So
okay.
As
that's
displayed
what that
there.
Means. Okay.
Right. But I think what we decided with this policy is that going forward it will only be applied to the buyer. They're taking the risk because Because what if it, that, you know, what if they think that it's going to apply and it either doesn't apply to the whole transfer or only a portion of it? It's, it doesn't seem right for the seller to have to come collecting on that when they didn't expect to.
Yeah. Mark, do you have a comment?
Yeah, ask Upland how successful they've been collecting the 15% from us yet.
I've been twisting your arm for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know.
Right.
My comment would be is it's Ontario spent a lot of time thinking about maybe how this could be formatted, so I would encourage them to work with staff to come up with a table which clearly presents information and then ultimately have that run through the process.
I would say that
and we're okay with the change in how 15% is paid, whether it's paid back to the seller or the buyer. I mean, we're okay with that. What it does for the members of the pool is it eliminates that as part of any deal making, which is fine with us. On the last, actually, item, page 66, which is talks about aquifer storage and recovery.
Okay.
We're okay with this. This is written to assume that, for instance, Monta Vista has ASR wells and it has used those in the past. So it's written in the context that Monta Vista will directly acquire replenishment water, inject it through its facilities, and if that water was subject to the 85-15 transaction, then it would only be the cost of the water that we would be subject to the 85-15 rule. That's fine. However, Watermaster did utilize our facilities just recently to get water into the ground. Actually, it was both water that was purchased preemptively for desal replenishment, as well as a large block of it was purchased for the benefit of Fontana Water Company in Niagara. And as part of that transactional cost, Watermaster and ultimately everybody who bought water paid for the treatment cost. So if you look at this in the context of Watermaster will use ASR facilities, you know, this really doesn't make sense because we certainly wouldn't pay the treatment cost when someone else is using our infrastructure. So this seems a little bit limiting. If you use it in the context that ASR facilities are effectively equivalent to recharge facilities, which may be used by multiple people.
So you'd like us to modify?
Well, it's up to the group. What it does, and it limits Watermaster's access or another party's access to recharge facilities. So.
Well, perhaps we could include this item for the discussion over the next 12 months.
Works.
In case
we
need to modify.
It works.
It is under like the heading. It says water transfers will be evaluated individually as follows.
Right.
It really is okay. Only with regards to water transfers. And I know what you mean with all the preemptive replenishment that we've been doing, but that wasn't a water transfer.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
I don't think injection's a water transfer either.
Okay. So we can work on that, and so we can work on that language, and I can work with Mohammed or someone on Ontario to modify another table, and then we'd bring it back in December for hopefully approval, and then which would be very timely because we plan to bring the assessment package in January.
Do we need to wait till December to approve this?
I'm not sure what the pool's pleasure is, but it seems like the only structural change to the policy that's presented today is to strike out the last several words regarding preemptive replenishment and the purpose. And I think Mark's point, although is extremely valid, I think does fall under our commitment to work on this policy and refine it maybe further in the next 12 months. So I'm not sure if we need to even take it back.
I'm actually good to move this forward with that change.
One other clarification is that moving forward means that the current assessment package will apply the current rules to it.
Correct.
And with that, Mark is making the move. I'll second that.
All in favor?
I'm sorry. Need to clarify Mom's comment. You're, your point would be that the assessment package for this year would include this policy.
Correct.
As current.
The package that we're working on right now that will be coming through in January.
Incorporate this, what we're voting on. Understand.
So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. So I guess now we need to, I saw that Mr. Wildermuth is in the audience. Do we have to reorder the agenda to move to reports and updates?
If that's what you want to do, yes.
Please. So I guess moving on to Watermaster General Legal Counsel report.
All right, three items to report on. The October 28th hearing, we had a very lengthy hearing with Judge Reichert. The reason it was lengthy is that he had an extraordinary number of questions and wanted to discuss and thoroughly understand every point that was made. I, for one, thought it was a very good hearing in that respect. There were a couple of, I think, very notable procedural things that happened during the hearing that I think speak well for this judge. One is that he took appearances from everyone who was in the courtroom. Judge Gunn used to let people introduce themselves, but he actually took people's appearances and noted it in the record, and then during the course of the hearing allowed people to talk and prompted people to talk. So it became more of a group discussion than anything else. He followed the practice that he used in the recharge master plan hearing of coming off the bench and sitting down at the table for the presentation. So he was, it was much more that he was engaged in the process, having a discussion with the parties, taking input rather than off, you know, being presented something with that distance. I think for me, the whole context of the hearing marked a very nice change in the way that information is presented to the court. So again, we went through a very lengthy day of going through all the technical details of this motion. And while previous hearings with Judge Gunn, we never had that. That was because all of that kind of presentation was given to the judge by the special referee and her assistant behind closed doors. If you recall those hearings, when the judge would come out from chambers, he came out with the special referee and her assistant. That was one way of getting him information, but it was done behind closed doors. Nobody ever saw the technical presentation that was made to the judge. Now it's being done out in the open. Everyone's there. Everyone can hear it, and everyone can participate in it. So I, for one, am much happier with this process. I think it's a much more open process, and everyone knows what's going on and knows what the judge thinks and why. So I was very pleased with how it went. Again, it was lengthy, but I think the judge really understood things and is very engaged with them. One of the things that came up, one of the issues that was on the agenda was the restated judgment. We presented it to him as a receive and file action. Just before we went into the hearing, the non-agricultural pool asked that a disclaimer be put on it, that this was just a receive and file so that the operative legal document would remain the 1978 judgment plus the amendments that were made throughout the course of time. The judge indicated that that's not how he wanted it done. He wants the restated judgment to be the official document. So what he asked was to come back to him with a motion that presents it as the piece of paper that we're giving to him becomes the operative legal document, which means that the base in legal terms, the 1978 judgment would be vacated and the 2011 judgment would become the judgment. it's the only real difference, so long as we have all the words right on the paper, the only difference is that if you did a page reference to the judgment in a pleading, what you're referencing is the 2011 version, not the 1978 version. But we'll need to frame that up as a motion. We'll bring it through the pools, give everyone a chance to approve it, have the board approve it, and then submit it to him.
Michael, if I understand correctly, then what was submitted to the court will just be resubmitted to the court.
Yes, it will be the exact same document.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll go through, now that we know that what's going to happen is that that document itself will become the legally operative one, I'd like to do another review of it just to, you know, the level of typographic analysis we did was befitting one that was being a receive and file. If that's going to become the actual judgment, you know, I want to do another review of it. But yeah, it's the same document.
Okay, and how does that work once the piece two time frame is over?
It
because we revert back to the original judgment,
and so that would take the form of sort of another amendment that unamends the judgment, and so there would then need to be another document that would be just like doing an amendment. Again, this shouldn't be a hard process, as Mark pointed out. It's the same document; we're just resubmitting it in a different way. The third item is the December 17th, 2011 recharge master plan filing. Under the October 2010 court order that approved the recharge master plan, the court ordered a update to be provided by December 17th. That date is 6 months following the due date for the urban water management plans. Because in the 2010 filing, we indicated that when the urban water management plans come out, it could change the recharge master plan. So the court asked for an update 6 months after that happened. Given the events of the last week, I think it's going to be difficult for us to get to that filing in a timely way, since to make a December, you know, that's only a little bit more than a month out to make that filing. So I would expect, though we'll need to get authorization from the board and et cetera, I would expect we're going to ask for some form of continuance of that to give us enough time to actually make that filing. I'm happy to answer questions. That's all I have to report.
Any pool questions? Thank you. Moving on to Water Master Engineering Report.
One of the things that was required by this court order, or the court order from last October, that's October 2010, to be included in this update to the court was an analysis of projected groundwater production and replenishment. And so right about the time, I'm going to say July, you started inquiring and collecting urban water management plans from all the parties that are required to produce them. So we were able to acquire most of them. I think there's one out there that still isn't complete. But in the discussions with that entity, we were able to figure out what their plan would be. Can you give me a hand on that one? Well, as we said before, it's required by court order. We went through all the available, thank you, urban water management plans that we could find. As most of you know, there's a great deal of inconsistency in the preparations of urban water management plans. There's a water reliability section, which shows that what your water supply plan would be under a normal year, a critical dry year, or a multiple year drought scenario. Well, that's a three-year scenario. And in the analysis of these plans, some parties pick different years for their critical years or different three-year periods are not consistent. A great deal of these plans assume that they develop a water supply plan for the normal critical dry year and the three-year plan that matches the demand in those periods. Other parties, when they prepare them, they show their total supply portfolio as available to them in those three different planning scenarios, and often show surplus or a great deal of surplus. So you just can't blindly use these plans. There are some that don't specify or don't put enough specificity as to what groundwater means. Some just say groundwater is a supply. They describe it in text, but when they come to show their plan, they don't distinguish which sources of groundwater they're using, which basin. So we went through those things. We talked to producers and modified those plans somewhat. And we're going to show you the first cut at that. We have a draft report written. There's a little more fact-checking, and we're originally trying to get it out last week, but it'll be available to Watermaster staff, IUA staff, and Conservation District staff on about Monday, and then distribute it out to you guys to look at and provide some comment and direction. And there are a lot of underlying assumptions in it that I'll hint at a few of them, but I'm sure you'll have some comment on. Sure. This is kind of a detailed table. I'll break it down very simply for you. But what it does, it's sort of an aggregate. It's a comparison of the total groundwater production in the basin based on a normal year. And I'll tell you what, how it differs if you assume made other assumptions as to critical years. And it compares it against the aggregate production right. You may remember from all the work we've done in the past in doing these kinds of production projections and replenishment projections, we assume this efficient market assumption. We make an efficient market assumption. What that means is that we're not going to allow underproducers to store water forever. And that makes sense because there are caps for things like that. And that water is too valuable to sit there while other people who are maybe chronic overproducers would be going out in the market to buy water. If we allowed that to happen, we'd end up with water and storage going out of sight. And it wouldn't take very many years for that problem to occur. So in all our past work, including the last all the engineering work for the peace agreements and the recharge master plan update, we make this efficient market assumption. So what this table shows are the fiscal years, the planning years, going from 2010 to 2035. And this is the aggregate production. And this is quite a bit. This is all three pools and the CDA. And it is quite a bit less than what we used in the 2008 recharge master plan. It's, if you remember, Rich Atwater was telling us that those numbers were high. You know, we came back to you at the time and you asked us to continue using those numbers. These are the revised numbers. The next series of columns, where it says save deal total, show the buildup of what I call production rights, if you want. This is the safe yield that was projected in the last modeling runs we've done. This is the controlled overdraft at 200,000 acre feet, doled out at 5,000 acre feet per year pursuant to the judgment. It ends in 2017. This is the reoperation water, and this is a projection that we've been making. It may not exactly jive with what numbers that Danny has, but it's close. And the first tranche of that water being exhausted for the existing CDA facility, part of CDA, and then the second 10,000 acre feet per year coming online as the CDA expansion comes online. This is a 6,500 acre feet per year that's provided for in Piece 2. That's supposed to be the recharge into Management Zone 1. You'll see that both the reop and that, I'm assuming, for conservative purposes, that it ends in 2030, which is when the peace agreement ends, so it can be extended. In this case, we've not done that. This column here is a mid-range recycled water recharge projection from IUA, and this number here, this first number, is supposed to be 7,100 based on their urban water management plan. We didn't catch that, so it's a little bit off there. So you sum all these up and you end up with this column here, which is an aggregate production right. This next column says replenishment obligation. And that column is positive only if groundwater production exceeds production rights in aggregate. You can see it's zero all the way out to the late 2020s. This column here is the CURO starting at 2009-2010 using these projection numbers. And you'll see it's negative and getting more negative, and it gets quite large. It gets up to a little over 300,000 acre feet. That means you're underproducing and it's going into storage during all those years. And then when this shows up here, you start seeing positive values for replenishment obligation. That means in aggregate, groundwater production has exceeded the rights, and they see this number is coming down. In theory, other than the 6,500, if you believe these projections, you wouldn't have to buy any production water, at least go outside to buy it, because you'd always have enough water left under production and accumulating under production in the early years of this projection to balance over production you have. So and when you read this, you'll see one of the key assumptions here is that we've taken ag production and we've assumed that ag production phases out, just as if we did in the other ones. In 2020, it goes down to 5,000 acre feet. However, if it doesn't go down to 5,000, it stays higher, then your projections will be lower. But it's not quite a wash. But if we worked and tried to modify that, what would happen was that you probably would have a replenishment obligation sooner. In other words, instead of being positive down here in 2029, it might be positive a little further up. But you still have this large negative CURO building up based on your projections. Now, if we go back and do the same analysis and we said, assume the critical dry year occurs every year, and we look at your water supply plants, or the three-year period, and look at for your water supply plants and plug it into here, we get kind of a similar look, only by about 2020, you start having a positive replenishment obligation, net positive replenishment obligation. Well, that's a very conservative assumption based on the projections you've given us. So it looks, base value, where the numbers are going, is that you're not going to have to buy a lot of replenishment water. You guys have made some decision that you're going to either produce at your rights or slightly underproduce your rights. And in aggregate, you can see in the early years, 15,000 underproduction goes up to 34, so that's another 19,000 in aggregate, even with the CDA production. You guys are going to underproduce for a long time. I think you need to look at this. You may have some ideas. You want to change some of the things we've assumed for you. So when this report comes out next week, it'd be a really great idea to take a look at it.
Question mark.
Sure.
Most of us rely both on groundwater production and imported water for our water supply. And we usually make assumption on the availability for imported water to come up with those numbers for water production. Did you check those imported water numbers collectively and whether or not they are realistic numbers?
Let me help with your question. Are you asking if we looked at the collective
use of
imported water demands?
Correct.
The answer is no. We didn't aggregate those together.
Hi. Questions for you. Can you go back to the other slide? Does the groundwater production include the desalter after it's built out? Okay. So, and there's nothing in here that accounts for new yield, like attributable to the desalters and stuff. Is that inherently included in your safe yield number?
No, there is no increase. Well, let me back up. It's built into the safe yield number as we modeled it.
Uh-huh.
As we modeled it into the future.
Okay. Now, so that's something that we need to break out internally. Now, the desalter production, the one, two, three, four, fifth column, where it has all those 10,000 acre feet every year, there's nothing that says, I mean, if the desalter production is completely borne, the cost is completely borne by the appropriators, the fact that we're allocating 10,000 acre feet a year for a whole bunch of years, we could use all that water on the front end and just pay it on the back end too.
Well, there's two tranches of water.
Right.
And the first tranche for showing expiring in around 2013.
Uh-huh.
And then the second tranche starting up when the expansion is. And that second tranche is dedicated to the expansion.
Uh-huh.
And you know, this is the modified version of the schedule that's been sent to the court.
Right. But my question is that second tranche of water, there's nothing that says how it should be drawn down. I mean, that second tranche of water could have an accelerated drawdown as well, if we so chose. Because, I mean, we're going to be the ones paying for all of the replenishment.
I'm not sure, Michael. Do you know?
Well, as Mark indicated, this is being done pursuant to a schedule that was submitted to the court. The parties can make the choice about how that schedule reads. So, yes, it could be done that way. We would have to go through the process and resubmit to the court for approval.
Okay. And just questions. But
Sherry, I'd just add to that. That would be at the choice of the expansion parties.
Right. Oh.
Right.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, the expansion parties aren't going to pay for the desalted water, for the replenishment water anyways. The water master parties are. It's just a matter, I mean, if we chose to, the rapid drawdown over the next few years of that, what is it, 175,000 or something acre feet, we could do that just as easily as we could spread it out over the next so many years. I think Scott had ideas to get more recycled water in the ground, too, that we were going to look at.
Right.
But okay, so now, but the 65. Now moving on, the 6,500 acre feet, that is something that's going to be replenishment. So that in effect is replenishment, because piece two allowed for that 6,500 to be any water that happened to get recharged. Go ahead and put it in MZ1. But if we don't otherwise have a replenishment obligation in the basin, then there's still going to be the obligation to go out and purchase supplemental water to put in MZ1. So that is, in effect, some type of replenishment water.
It's a recharge. It's a requirement for recharge.
Right.
How you characterize it, you know, it could be, if there was a 6,500 acre foot replenishment obligation that year and you put it all in MZ1, it would satisfy it.
Okay. Now, you said you made a comment about the underproduction versus overproduction being equalized. So this is like the basin as a whole. So some parties will still be underproducers and some parties will be overproducers. And so that'll all still be taken care of internally. So maybe that's where if one party needs to buy replenishment water, that's where it would come from.
You know, I could only speculate to say that underproducers will probably move water to overproducers because there's a physical limit to what you can store.
Now,
and there's also, you know, great asset value. It becomes a stranded asset if you don't use it.
This chart is very descriptive. I'm a numbers person, so I mean, it's very descriptive for me. And it seems like it's a huge change from having a huge Curo and how big should we allow the Curo to be dialogue to now we're having a negative Curo and we're going to be, you know, have surplus of water within the basin. And I guess that calls into question the recharge master plan. You know, I mean, because we still have the balance of recharge and discharge throughout the basin. And there's still a lot of parties that are severely impacted by the drawdown and the drawdown of the desalters and everything else. So I'm just, you know, I mean, is that something?
Let me give this context. This was done because at the time, recharge master, well, at least this part of it, recharge master plan was done, there was concern as to whether or not we would have to go out and look for other water sources other than metropolitan.
Uh-huh.
We were concerned about the need for preemptive replenishment, things of that sort. This was not really a balance of recharge and discharge consideration. This was, do we have enough supplemental sources to buy from, mm-hmm. which I think is something we can talk about in a second. And secondly, do we have enough facilities to accomplish what's required by the judgment? And the answer, if these projections hold, is yes and yes.
Okay, so but this assumes a certain amount of people buying treated water on the surface, and then this is only the amount. So if people change the way they do things, that could impact this as well.
Sure.
Okay.
And it's something that needs to be looked at probably every 5 years or sooner if something material changes. The general sentiment that we got in talking to producers is that people are going to minimize their production either to produce at or near their rights or underproduce, with the idea of making that water available to for replenishment of desalters. And but not everybody knows what everybody else is doing. That's what's kind of fun about this analysis. You know, they put it all together. And that's kind of what you're alluding to on the imported water. Does it make sense or not? Well, I haven't sat down and looked at everybody's looked at integrating all the water sources and comparing it against IUA's urban water management plan. Maybe, Ryan, you've done that. Have you done that?
Compared to these numbers?
No, compared all, and for the appropriators in your service area, have you compared all their urban water management plans to your urban water management plan?
Ideally, they should be the same, but because of the timing, they're a little different.
But the imported water supplies for direct use don't surprise you? I mean, are they?
No.
As to the availability of supply for replenishment if you need it, Ryan, Chris Birch, and I met with some folks at Metropolitan. I've read their urban water management plan, their IRP update, and in discussions with them, and they're basically saying if we're going to be paying full service prices for water, that there's not going to be a shortage. You know, they may have some shortages, and particularly in the next few years, they feel like they can satisfy those by going into the marketplace and doing temporary transfers. Yeah, my big asterisk I put on that, and this is not a criticism of Met, it's just an observation, is that they're using a 83, 84-year period of hydrology, which is representative of things they know. They haven't considered things that they don't know, which are only, well, things they can't operationalize. For example, we know that there's been much longer droughts in the past than are reflective in the period of hydrology they use. And they don't take into account things like climate change. A plethora of information is out there on climate change, so it's not explicitly in their work. So they may have more trouble than they're saying. In which case, you'd probably come back and set some level of service, you know, maybe some one of your contingency plans on during dry periods, and respond to that. But even with those plans, it doesn't look to us that you're going to have much of a replenishment challenge in the future, as long as you guys will move water back and forth. This kind of curo buildup, this negative curo, is, to me, suggests the need for a storage management plan. We need to go back and think about how we store water in the basin. If maybe that's not a bad thing. If this doesn't interfere with hydraulic control, then this might be a great asset to have for some future business purpose. On the other hand, if it looks like it does, then we have to come up with a way of increasing production so we don't have that problem or accept the consequences.
Mark, I thought the desalter replenishment obligation was a much more significant number than what's being represented here.
I haven't shown you what the replenishment obligation is. I've only shown you the contribution of reoperation water used to offset replenishment. It's a replenishment obligation. It gets up to 39,000 acre feet.
A year?
Yes.
Oh. That one said replenishment was zero. Now I'm confused.
No. Why don't you go back? Complicated table. Okay, this is production. It includes the CDA. And then I have several columns here which describe the production right as I build it up to this total number out here. So this is just reoperation water dedicated to offset the salter production. This is about what the production is in those years, except for 2013, in which case it's a little bit, it's probably the 29,000 roughly, and it's going to be 5,000 acre feet short. So we're actually having a replenishment occur now for that desalter. And then in these years where it says 10,000, production's around 39,000.
Oh, so you're back to the individual versus basin-wide, because this is basin-wide, so the desalters themselves will have a replenishment obligation, but because other parties are underproducing, then they'll be able to sell or allocate that production to offset the desalters' replenishment obligation.
Correct, yes.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because like the recycled water recharge, that goes to individual parties, not to a particular cause. So it's just increasing the supply within the basin.
Correct.
Got it.
this is just mind-blowing because this is like 180 degrees from where we were a couple months ago. You know, having a huge Curo, and how are we going to manage our Curo, and how are we going to get more recharge assets to, let's just ditch all the recharge assets because we don't need them.
Well, and that's true. Wow. In the last go about, we had a supply
chain
starting about
2015,
2014.
Is that a motion?
Can we go to the next slide real quick? This is a plot that shows production, and the total height of the bar, each star column, if you will, is production. And the production rights correspond to the production in this case because you're underproducing. So you're producing all from your production rights, and these out years you're picking up an actual period where you produce more water from the production rights, and so you've got to find a way to replenish that, whether it be from water and storage or not. So the reason you see it kind of jumping here, I have to go back and check my notes, but production must be going up like that for some reason in the out years. Well, that's it. We'll get a report to water management on the 14th and to you tomorrow.
Mark, just two comments. Can we go back to that summary slide, the one before? You know, we certainly look forward to reading the study. I think it's what we thought in the sense of growth has slowed down. From our perspective and others, I think it's easy to get lulled in. As a region, these numbers look great. I think there are local concerns that of the physical solution that still need to be addressed, but to say that we're good as a region is probably true as a program look, which is what this slide is. But there are still concerns localized, so we need to keep that in mind.
This only responds to, if you read the recharge master plan update and the recommendation, which was kind of made an action item in court order, do we have enough recharge capacity? And do we have enough sources of water to replenish if we need it? It has nothing to do with, you know, hydrologic balance and the balance of recharge and discharge. That's a completely separate consideration.
One last question. The recycled water recharge, now we'll be able to recharge those amounts regardless of the fact that we're not putting water in recharge basins. I mean, I know the requirements change and they blend with the flow on the bottom and all that other stuff. So are those numbers all doable with those parameters of the recycled water?
In my discussions with IUA through 2020, it's not a problem. After that, we'll have to have some kind of discussion on it.
Mark, I also assume that the urban water management plans that you looked at also included a conservation component to comply with, you know, SB X7-7 requirements.
They all do.
Yeah.
In the city of Upland's case, I clearly remember sitting with Mark Wiley and Sean Stone going over the urban water management plan and being given very specific instructions on how to change those numbers for this analysis. Right. Mm-hmm. And all those kind of modifications are footnoted in that report. So you'll be able to see what we did for you. Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Obviously, it's a lot to think about. Did you have anything for the item 2 under your engineering report?
Yeah, we have a draft report almost complete on this material physical injury analysis for the GE injection project. And so, again, that'll be submitted to Water Master staff, and Michael and others next week also, and we'll bring it forward in if it's ripe in the December pool process.
Thank you. Moving on to item C.
Okay, I actually have three quick items to report on. The first is the Regional Board Basin Plan Amendment. We've been talking about this for few years now, I think. So I think you're all familiar with the concept that we've asked the regional board, but we're trying to amend the basin plan so that we don't have to do as much surface water sampling on the river. We spend about $200,000 a year for that sampling. There's seven stations that have to be sampled every 2 weeks. So we're trying to reduce the sampling so that there's just quarterly sampling on the river, and then we will have to do some additional sampling on the Chino Creek. We were hoping to get it through by the end of the calendar year, but it didn't make it onto their December meeting schedule. So we're hoping that it'll make it on the January meeting. But that's all the update I have for now. So, you know, the best case would be maybe by the by March, we might have the new requirements in place. Personally, I just really hope we have it in place by budget time, because it's always an issue of how do we budget for it when it's an unknown when it'll go away. But I don't know anything further at this point. And second, I was just going to give you a quick recharge report. The sheet's back there on the table, so you've probably seen it. We don't have the October numbers in. September, we put 163 acre feet of stormwater, almost 8,000 of imported. Right? And recycled water was 639 for a year total of stormwater, 504 imported, 23,000, because you'll recall some of that met water was in the previous fiscal year, and recycled is at 1830. Now, we had the storm last weekend, but I guess it only had local impacts, and so we think we captured about 300 acre feet of water during that storm, but they're still doing the calculations, and then there's another storm coming this weekend that we're preparing for. And then one last item I just wanted to bring to your attention. We have some meeting schedule changes just because of all the holidays, so next week will be the advisory and board because of Thanksgiving holiday. And then in December, we'll be moving the board meeting up 1 week also to the same day as advisory because of it, otherwise it would just fall too close to Christmas. And we've also added the land subsidence committee meeting, which if you picked up an agenda at the table over there, it does have it added, but the one that was sent out in the package doesn't. So on Wednesday, November 16th at 1 p.m., we'll be having a land subsidence committee meeting here. And that's all I have.
All right.
Mr. Chair, got a question for Danny. With respect to this upcoming storm, is Turner Basin ready to receive any water, or are they still working on that?
I do not know. Jerry, do you know? Or?
I don't really, but I thought that they had at least portions of it up and running. Certainly not the whole system, but I think a portion of it is.
Okay, thank you.
Alrighty, for information items, the cash disbursement and newspaper articles, I believe, are on the back table. And with that, I'd like to adjourn into closed session.
Can I make a comment first?
Sure, I'm sorry.
I'm concerned. I just wanted to recognize this. Three Valleys Director David De Jesus was appointed as one of the vice chairs of Metropolitan recently, so congratulations to you, David. And then also, I really appreciate Mark's update on the Urban Water Management Plan. It's a real success story for the region in terms of more efficient use of water as well as developing alternative water supplies to recycle water. So it's really puts a very positive spin on everything we're doing.
Are there any other pool member comments? Seeing none, we'd like to go ahead and adjourn into closed session.
We've got to report that closed session first, and then we'll go into open session.
Oh, okay.
Sir, we have, I believe, two reportable actions out of closed session,
and I'm going to have Mr. Kinsey, who has written them down, describe those to you.
Okay. In closed session, appropriate pool requested that John Chance work with Water Master Legal Counsel concerning development of a uniform storage agreement with Inland Empire Utilities Agency, and also requested that John Schatz work with Water Master to facilitate with Water Master regarding the preemptive replenishment agreements that harm or prejudice to the City of Chino or the Group of Community Services District Agreements.
Did you get that, Sherry? So help me here, but so now we need to re.
One more.
Oh, that's it. And there's no action on the other items. So now we need to readjourn into open session to finish up on the business items that we deferred. I think they're sitting outside looking in the window as you speak. So, hey, so he's covered with the paper, right? Yeah, okay. Okay, now we're back in session. We are requesting that Water Master staff defer business items B, C, and E to the December meeting. Can I get a, we need a motion and a second on that action, I suspect.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And then just for staff's information, we did take closed session reported action related to the D item that I don't want to go in. I don't want to try to regurgitate, quite frankly. But it is written and documented, and things will be addressed in that in terms of that D item. So.
So you will give us a written
report? Just read it
yeah, you might. Sherilyn has it. Okay. I didn't.
Well, you know, just to clarify, when we reported, we were in open session when we reported out the action. So just because some folks in the room, maybe you could just read back what John mentioned when we reported out in open session. What's supposed to be in open session. So this is
The appropriate approval request that John Schatz worked with Watermaster Legal Counsel regarding the storage agreements with IUA and Haruka and have.
No. Yeah, maybe maybe we should do it again.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll try to do it.
Let's record it.
Okay. Came out of closed session. I'm making. They made two motions because I was describing closed session. One is to direct John Schatz to work with Watermaster Legal Counsel to develop a uniform storage agreement with Inland Empire Utilities Agency and request that John Schatz facilitate with Watermaster resolution of the preemptive replenishment agreements without harm or prejudice to the Chino and Rupa Community Service District agreements.
Thank you. And just for your information, predicated on their expectation about what you might do, the non-agricultural pool deferred all of, I guess, your items A, B, C, D, and E to next month.
Appreciate that. And I think one last comment before pool comments is, in regards to that D item, the expectation is that John and legal counsel for Watermaster will be scheduling a meeting more likely next week to start addressing some of those issues. And it's the pool's desire to notice the entire appropriative pool and whoever else wants to be involved so that we can have as much involvement as possible to facilitate the expeditious execution of those agreements. So if we can get the notice out, maybe through Watermaster, so everybody knows when and where those meetings will be conducted.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. With that, it's been a long morning. Does anybody have any comments, questions, concerns before we adjourn?
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys. Have a nice month.